And in 3, 2, 1, we have liftoff.
You are listening to the Discerning Eye Podcast, discerning all things cannabis, with your hosts, Alan Villatoro, Aaron Luna, and Brianna Grignon.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about these flavors. Like, how do you come about choosing these flavor profiles? Like, your newest ones, like watermelon mint, blackberry?
I would say that's really a team collaboration. I mean, yeah. When we make products, I've said this before, but I don't really drink the grapefruit hibiscus that much because I don't really like grapefruit all that much. It's one of nature's worst fruits, if you ask me. though I do use it in a lot of products I make, ironically. The grapefruit is really great. It's just not for me. So, we try to come up with things that people are going to like. What is popular? Lemon's popular. Grapefruit's popular.
Yep.
As far as the twist to them, that's all kind of based on my bartending experience and just flavored tasting experience.
Makes a lot of sense.
I'm blessed to have a lot of friends and former colleagues who have worked in bar and food. And people don't know this, a lot of really great, what makes great flavors is often bartenders. It's bartenders and it's chefs and it's people who work in restaurants. These things find a way out of those places and make it into, other bigger food chemistry places when you get consumer products. But that's where you really find the innovation when it comes to the food and beverage industry. So I've had the good fortune of having a lot of good training over the years to figure out what blends, but we have a Slack channel where people post flavor ideas to me.
There you go.
Dylan has proposed a couple himself, even though he's been a little less than loquacious on this podcast. But I think the watermelon mint was actually proposed by two separate people. It was actually a guy who used to work at the same shop that I used to do who proposed it, who's friends with our creative director. He suggested that. And I think independently, our sales guy Colin also suggested it. So. Okay. I had to at least give it a try, so and it worked out really well.
Yeah.
It's just a hint of mint. That's important for people to know.
It's very subtle, but it's refreshing.
Yeah, just a little touch of it.
Yeah,
just a little kiss of mint is
out.
I love it.
A little kiss of mint.
And then the terpene element of it just comes from smelling all the various terpenes that I have in my house.
Yeah.
Cantaloupe haze.
Okay.
Yeah. And then so the blackberry lavender comes from, I do like the taste of lavender. I went through actually a couple different herbs to try to find what was going to complement the blackberry. The lavender seemed to have the most sort of I tried sage at one point, just didn't work out well.
Lavender is high in linalool.
High in linalool.
Yeah.
That is another heavy terpene in it. Mm-hmm. And it's fun because it actually turns purple. So most people don't see the colors of these, but there actually are some colors. They just don't pour them out of cans. Mm-hmm. But the grapefruit hibiscus is a nice pink, which comes from the hibiscus. Because we use real hibiscus, the basil, the lemon basil has got a slight sort of almost lemonade color. Mm-hmm. And the blackberry lavender is going to be a little bit purplish. But the terpenes for those would be sour tangent.
Okay.
Sour tangent. A very popular strain.
So you kind of brought up something interesting about you said there's a color to it. So would you recommend when people try these, they drink them right out of the can?
I think so.
Yeah?
I mean, I don't really see the point in not drinking it out of the can. I mean, the color comes into play if you're making a light. We do publish recipes on our website if anyone wants to check out our blog, which I think is probably the least trafficked part of any of our socials. But I come up with recipes mostly based on different bar recipes that I've done, and you get a nice color in it. I actually recommend people drinking out of the can because something that people don't necessarily know about seltzer, because this is more true of seltzer than soda, which usually has a variety of things to keep the carbonation in. Seltzer will go flat pretty quickly. If you pour it from thing to thing, what happens is all the anytime you shake
it.
What everybody knows when you shake up a can of soda then open it, it like spurts out, right? Because what happens there is you shake it up and all the carbon dioxide tries to leave out of the liquid and it builds up in the top of it. So when you open it right away, it splashes everywhere. If you leave it for a while, the carbon dioxide can redissolve back into the liquid.
Oh,
this is way too chemistry weedsy for a podcast, but a cool thing about ours that people on the podcast can't see is that we have reclosable lids, which are also child resistant. So these things are actually patented by a company in Germany. You can close them completely and it'll keep its carbonation.
Yep.
So I recommend drinking them out of the can if you want them to be the most carbonated, but they'll survive a pour.
I love the cans. And when I first opened it, remember on our seltzer episode?
Yeah.
It was great. I mean, we both were splashing each other, trying to open these cans, but it was like the anticipation.
Yeah.
the excitement behind it, mm-hmm. and then the flavor. It was just
something I learned early okay. too is when you open these, don't lean them away from yourself.
Okay.
Because the opening tab is far away from you, so the tendency gotcha. Because when people open a soda normally, they're holding the part where they drink. That's gotcha. Where it opens. Right. This one's got a little like air release behind it when you open. So if you hold it away from yourself, it shoots liquid
out.
If you hold it level or yeah. towards you, it will never splash
that's what
you.
We were doing wrong.
And that is definitely something I've heard about every single beverage that carries this has this lid, which is that sometimes it explodes on people, and that's kind of. It took me actually a lot of exploded sodas to figure out.
So each one of these is 12 fluid ounces. So it's that skinny can that it's a tall, skinny one. It's nice
and sleek styles, but that's what professionals call it. And we have custom koozies just for
them.
I know, the koozies are
very classy looking. The colors, everything.
Yeah, even, you know, one of the cool things about it is the cane sugar. You know, it's not some artificial stuff.
It's real sugar. It's not, we don't use any stevia to, like, some people will put some sugar in it and then to make it sweeter, they'll add stevia or sucralose or sorbitol, anything that is like a
or
sweetener.
Agave
is actually, is a real sugar. The difference being that like an agave is a sugar that's derived from the agave plant. So it's like honey. It comes in, like honey is mostly sugar, right? That's just sugar made in a specific way by bees. Agave is kind of like honey made by the agave
plant. Honey the only thing that, like the only substance that we eat that an insect makes or something like that?
Maybe.
I don't think there's anything.
Unless you eat insects directly.
I never thought of that.
I never thought about that. That is a great high thought.
It also does not expire, ever.
Oh, interesting.
That's pretty sweet.
It crystallizes, I've noticed. My wife actually came home the other day to, there was a honey in the microwave because I wanted to test to see if I could remelt it, and then I left it in the microwave.
Did it work?
It did. It like mostly melted back.
Because I get that a lot, but I still love that honey, especially the local stuff. Mm-hmm. But you're right, it does crystallize.
Yeah.
So
we use 2 grams of sugar in these drinks, which is really the minimum amount of sugar I found that made the drink better. Because I tried it with 0 grams of sugar, and it just wasn't quite as good. Again, it's like all these little touchstones where it's like, you can taste the cannabis more without the 2 grams of sugar, but I don't think 8 calories is really breaking anybody's diet.
No.
Particularly when a White Claw is 100 calories.
Ugh. I mean, seriously, eight calories is nothing.
It's like getting
for
up and walking to the fridge and then walking back to your chair and
you burn
that right off.
In fact, you're probably at a negative, net.
You could put that on
a lot more than that. Celsius does that on their seltzers. We'll have to take that up with legal. We help you lose. I actually did get like a feedback form where someone says I'm using these to lose weight. So we've been getting ready to pull that out and put that up on a big billboard for everybody.
There you go.
8 calories, you can have easily, 3-4 of these in one sitting.
Mm-hmm.
No problem. And depending on.
I'm consistently at like 2 1/3, which is why the reclosable is helpful because.
Right.
Somewhere around, I guess, that would be 7 milligrams is,
okay.
I guess, what my right dose is.
But I think, too, there's a difference in the way that a nano-emulsified THC is absorbed in terms of the potency of it, right?
That is right. So in a traditional edible, what happens is you eat that. It is still oil inside that edible, so it doesn't really go through your stomach or your esophagus. Just kind of sits in your stomach and then it makes its way into the liver.
Mm-hmm.
When it's in the liver, it converts, your metabolism converts into something called delta-11 THC at a relatively high rate. So that's what causes that sort of traditional edible effect and why it can take 60 to 90 minutes to set in, because it's got to make it all the way through the liver and get metabolized to make it into your bloodstream and then to your brain. With the nanoemulsion, there's probably some proportion that makes it to your liver, but it seems to be pretty small because I don't get that much of that traditional edible effect. And the reason much less of it makes it there is because it's already water soluble. It can get through the lining of your stomach and your esophagus. So it sits in, and we get varying reports. The average reported onset that we get is 10 2/3 minutes.
So 10.67.
It's an average.
What's the standard deviation?
That I could not tell you. I didn't run that one on Excel. I'll email you afterwards. But we do track that when people voluntarily report it. I mean, that is like an N of 70. So it's not like it's a hugely.
Oh, that's a decent number.
It's decent. It's more than 3. That's for sure.
Okay.
That makes it good. But
it's enough to get a good normal distribution.
Yeah. And we get most people reporting under 20. I've felt
great.
It within 5 minutes before. sometimes it's very different. I think we all know in this room, but if any podcast listeners, you know, cannabis affects everybody differently. And it's maddening if you make products because you can't really make a lot of consistent claims because one thing for one person could be something for somebody else entirely.
Right.
Well, so I wrote a blog about that recently about edibles and how there's some claim to, you know, is it an indica sativa? And it's really hard for the body to distinguish, number one. Number two, because everybody has different, you know, everybody... you know, reacts differently to it.
Mm-hmm.
But number two, it's really, unless you're using some live substance, and most, you know, aren't, you're not really retaining any of the original terpenes. So it's not a full spectrum item that you
need.
So to, you know, to make that claim seems, it just, you know, it doesn't seem to make sense to, you know, because most people's body.
I think that's about right. I mean, I've never had a sativa or an indica effect from an edible, particularly because you have so much of that conversion. But I know many people who swear that they definitely do, even because a lot of people do make edible from like cruder oil. And full spectrum is another like loaded term, I think, too, that has, because full spectrum,
sure.
I think my definition encapsulates two things, which is the breadth of the cannabinoid profile from the plant and
right.
the breadth of the terpene profile. And I think you're right, in like 95% of cases, most, but not all terpenes are gone in those oils. But you still will sometimes have a lot of the minor cannabinoids because they'll make it through extraction. And then, you know, those minor cannabinoids, those can, I think, have much more material effects too than the terpenes as well. But when I think of full spectrum, I think of it in kind of the way of like, do you have multiple cannabinoids and multiple terpenes? So there's kind of different gradations,
mm-hmm.
like, flower most full spectrum, oil less full spectrum, and then also it depends on which oil and how it was made
right.
and if it's live or not. And
right.
then you go to distillate and then isolate, it would be the least full spectrum because usually that's
it's
99% one compound.
Right.
And you can kind of take and recombine those things. Like a lot of the live resin cartridges you see out there will be oil. Yeah, you pull them off and then put them back on because what happens is for a cartridge to work for the most part, I've heard people making rosin cartridges that are not decarboxylated, but most are decarboxylated, which means like edibles are already converted.
Right.
And when you do that, you have to heat it up so aggressively. These terpenes are fragile molecules, they can break. So if you tried to straight up decarb them without actually taking off the terpenes first, you'd end up with something that tastes bad, and then your terpenes would taste bad. So you take them off, then you put them back. Now I'm going way too far down that rabbit hole.
It's like you're stripping it and then trying to reintroduce it in order to keep it, you know, in its most original form, I guess.
And there's some companies out there, even in Massachusetts, you'd be surprised to actually do this pretty well. I was really surprised to find out Mayflower actually has a pretty good extractions program where they actually do a CO2 that pulls off the terpenes first, and then they extract the cannabinoids, and then they put the terpenes back, which is probably the ideal way to make a full-spectrum cartridge. Because what we were talking about earlier, I don't remember if this was on mic or not, they don't focus on the branding well enough to actually communicate that to anybody. So I don't think anybody actually knows that. I think Mayflower is actually some of the better cartridges in Massachusetts.
Well,
but
you wouldn't
see that anywhere on Boston Trees.
Because, you know, part of what we love doing is, you know, identifying, like what you're pointing
mm-hmm.
out. People want to have... She's giving me bunny ears over there. I can't. Someday I'm going to understand your sign language, but right now I have no idea.
I think she meant talk louder.
Oh, sorry. My apologies. Part of what we're trying to do is find these brands and find these gems and bring them to the public because people need to see these brands. People need to try these brands and get, you know, try these experiences. Like we were talking about earlier with the sativa and the indica form of the edibles. I think you're right. It's more of the experience that you kind of set the tone for. You know,
mm-hmm.
when you're opening one of your cans, I don't know if that's the right term. Your cans, your bottles.
Yeah, they're cans. Right,
there you go.
I wouldn't call them bottles. There's only one bottle beverage in Massachusetts that I know of.
I was trying to give it a fancy name. I couldn't come up with anything. But anyways, cans. So when you open one of your cans, you have a set expectation of what you can come to expect. If it's a ginger peach, like what I'm having here,
mm-hmm.
You know, ginger and peach, you know, kind of in most people gives them some kind of a memory that it, you know, exudes some kind of an experience
mm-hmm.
that, you know, generally speaking, I'm assuming this is going to help them get there.
Yeah.
Right. As opposed to if there was a, you know, if you guys were saying you use XYZ strain and it's a distillate and whatnot, and you're trying to say that you're going to get this effect, I think everybody's going to experience something different,
mm-hmm.
but you're kind of setting the tone just with the flavor profile, I think, of what people can come to expect from an experience.
Well, so. I mean, even beverages aside,
I went off the deep end.
beverages aside, I think that, you know, if we're going to talk sativa and again hybrid, I think that we really need to be clear and if, you know, really make these consumers understand that that's, it's not going to be the driving force for your outcome. And I can't tell you how many times, you know, there were some serious heavy hitting indica strains specifically that we had carried at my previous job. And we had a customer very upset because it was at almost 38%. And she was like, I had a massive anxiety attack. Wow. This is supposed to be an indica.
It's like bubble hash.
It's a lot. And I think that, you know, customers don't understand that, like, okay, that might be a very heavy indica strain. But, you know, the different levels of the cannabinoids or the terpene profiles are going to affect you differently. And I think that that's the thing where we're trying to differentiate from getting in that hybrid sativa hybrid role and more the effect based.
Yeah, and more the experience.
Right. It's, you know, and the environment, like you said, that plays a major role in all of the good parts of it. But I just think that that's a misconception where, like, someone, if they look at a menu, they're going to be like, oh, a 5 milligram seltzer versus like a 3 milligram and 2 milligram CBD. Like, they don't understand though what that difference does. And I think that that's like the major misconception about hybrids, you know, that classification. Yeah. I want to personally steer away from that because, you know, I used to be the person who thought the sativa strains gave me anxiety. No, I was really going for way too high testing strains.
Yeah.
And I was later at home curled up in my bed, like in a ball. And I was like, why am I having this? Oh, it has to be because of the Durban poison. No, the Durban poison was testing at 29% and I smoked a full joint of it. Like, and you don't pay attention to things like that, you know? And
I'll get torched for this, but I smoked a lot of trim, particularly when I was in California, because it's freely accessible when you're an extractor. But I kind of prefer the lower THC. I think there's like a galvanizing movement. Let me ask you, you ladies, you've done responsible vendor training in the past, right? Because that's required in mass. The one that I took most recently actually told me that if a patient comes in and asks for something to help them go to bed, to give them an indica, and then that was a question on the test, which I think is irresponsible vendor training, if you ask me. I won't name the company, but the I thought that was a really out there.
It's a really bold claim.
I wouldn't be training bartenders on that, you know? Like, we don't. That's not like you said, it's not specifically just sativa indica hybrid. There's so many more factors and it's person based that you want to steer people towards what works for them and give them a sense of the effects without tying yourself to these three easy buckets that
and to go off that, I think that a lot of your bartenders don't have a clear understanding of what a strain is. So I think that not only is it irresponsible to guide people with those classifications, I think it's irresponsible for us to expect our bartenders, we're like strain genetics change, let's be honest. You know, you can really, in the state of Massachusetts, we've gotten different products, you know, my old job from different companies. The terpene profiles in every single one were drastically different, specifically with those like high testing linalool strains. It seemed like really when you're looking at those COAs that things just didn't really align. And I think that, you know, and again, it's about education and the understanding of the plant itself and really the different moving factors of it. And I think that we really forget that. And that's why, like, for our purveyors, I don't want that experience. I want to get the experience that me as a consumer recently has been looking for that I haven't gotten yet. And that's me to go in and have a budtender explain what cantrip is to me the way you explained it.
Right?
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is I know it may sometimes seem confusing because we're in the industry and we know these terms. But in the same time, our, you know, the budtenders, the purveyors, they can give that accurate information. Well, I just think that comes down to train. Right. And, you know, what are you as a company if you're not going to sell a product or represent it accurately? And I've seen it firsthand. And I think that that's a scary part of the industry where, you know, you go into a liquor store and if someone tells you it's gin, you know, and I think that we are labeling these different strains in so many different ways, that it's really misleading to the consumer. And that's where, you know, beverages, I think that it is good that it's not hybrid sativa indica leaning. You know, we're focusing on feeling, flavors, and
some brands will tell you that,
but we're starting to go away from it. Right. And we're starting to get away from it. And I think that that really is in the past year, for me at least, the spotlight's really started to shine on like the actual details of product rather than just the overview. And I think that, you know, that's where we're going to be different. And, you know, and that's my MO is that I want, you know, the hands-on learning for our purveyors. I want our customers to come in and be like, hey, I heard about cantrip. Like, let me talk to someone who knows about it. And it's going to be one of the staff members be like, hey, let's sit down and let me explain to you what nanotechnology is. And let me explain to you, you know, how fast this kicks in and not lie to them.
Right.
And not pull something out of your left cheek and be like, hey, I think I remember reading this, so I'm just going to tell you this. Because I've seen it firsthand and it's really discouraging, you know, and especially as a consumer to experience that.
Dylan has done a great job of working with our sales and marketing to make very clear, you know, assets for them to use. We have stuff that is just for bud tenders for them to be trained on with tasting notes and more details. And then we have stuff that's consumer facing, but they work really hard in getting a lot of that stuff into market. So that is, it's also easy for you guys, because let's be honest, you can communicate more clearly when things are easy and quick. The longer and more complicated you make it, the more you're going to turn consumers off. They're not even going to hear it when you say it, even if you get a bud tender to say it, right? No one wants to have a PhD in weed just to smoke weed, except for me.
Right. Yeah.
Could write a book on this. I think, you know, like definitely educating the staff on a lot of what, you know, what you're bringing to the table as a company is one of the things we're really going to focus on. Being able to tell that story, ideally incorporating into the, you know, a training regimen that will allow our staff to, you know, learn your product, learn the benefits of it, learn the benefits of it. And sorry, the mic is picking up a lot of outside, and it makes me want to dance, maybe, you know?
Right.
How's it going?
Yeah, some good music for it. Dylan, how many tablings a week do we do?
We do currently about like 3 tablings a week. And I think, you know, one thing that we're trying to communicate with Cantrip is we're here to have fun, right?
Yep.
We want a recognizable format for new consumers, quick onset time so that they can experience a meterly dose, but most importantly, stay next to their friends and family and enjoy it and have fun and create that experience.
And that's so important, you know, for two things, which is one you mentioned, which is when you just don't want people to lie to people, which just happens a lot of the time when
right.
we don't actually have facts on hand, so that it's, you know, we just will only say what we know to be true.
Right.
And the other part is, it goes back to stigma again, which is that if you, you know, I am happy when people can find medical value in any product that I've created. You know, that's really great for them. And cannabis does have tremendous medical value. That doesn't mean every product we consume has to be for medical value.
No.
If we
right.
can get more people to accept more broadly that this isn't just for medical value, that this is also for fun,
mm-hmm.
And the medicine kind of comes along with it, then, you know, people are going to look at this.
It.
And people look down as like, oh, you have to have medicine. So it's like either a pitying thing or a, you know, on
no.
the edge thing. But if it's, you know, something that more people accept is, I do this for the same reason I drink.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fun. I think what I see is the excuse that it's for something other than what it's meant to be, just to kind of try it.
Yeah.
And then you end up finding that the consumer ends up mm-hmm. liking it. I get a lot of colleagues that
right.
tell me all the time, oh, I'll never try this stuff, blah, blah, blah. But then if it's for pain or if it's for sleep or something like that,
mm-hmm.
and maybe in some cases there is some component of truth to it, but in others it's not. And it's just an excuse
I'll
to
help
try
you
it.
Before you get all the Twitter, the tweets at you, which is that, you know, there's definitely a lot of people who do, you know, find sincere medical value in
absolutely,
it.
Absolutely,
you know,
there is.
There's a strong need for the medical program to continue to exist. And if I don't say that on the record on this podcast, I'll also get tweets. So.
No, but you're right. There is. I mean, that's part of the reason I went into the industry is to break some of that stigma because of I found there was, eventually there's going to be a medical need for it, but we're not going to get there unless it's okay for everybody else to just, you know, and enjoy it.
That's
you know?
Exactly. Right,
and so, you know, that was why I went into the industry, you know, and so that's kind of what we're trying to accomplish here. And, you know, we're excited to bring brands like yours to market, talk about the story and, you know, help each other become successful in telling their stories, because that's really at the end of the day what how we're gonna be successful out here.
Yeah.
Because there's so many new brands coming out there on a daily basis. It's what are you doing to differentiate yourself? What are you doing to make sure that you leave your customers with a good experience? You know, with your product, and you know, our product is your product.
Yeah.
You know,
we're happy to be working with you guys and working with a shop that puts so much thought into everything that they're doing.
You know, I want to just bring everything back to a full circle. I think, you know, we were really fortunate to have you guys come on and talk about your product, your story, and give us some insight on how you got here and, you know, why it's important for people to come in and try, you know, products like yours. And, you know, we tried a couple of different flavors here. I'm currently having the ginger peach.
Yeah.
The
watermelon mint, the unreleased watermelon mint. Fantastic, by
yeah.
the way. Oh, my God.
Karen, what do you got there?
Grapefruit hibiscus and the watermelon mint.
And I think you were having
I got the lemon basil, didn't bring enough in for everybody.
I think is all the flavors you have right now. And
Dylan's also drinking the grapefruit biscuits. I'm sorry. Next time we're going to have to talk more about finance, accounting, and operations.
I love it.
All the boards.
I know, right?
So what are the two new flavors hitting the market?
Yeah.
It should be the first week of May. There's a little bit of TV on there. If people want to make sure that they know exactly when it's hitting the market and where, they can follow us on Instagram at Cantrip Seltzer. I know I'm getting a little ahead of the plugs, but that is where we're going to post about it first.
Yeah. How do you spell that for them?
Cantrip Seltzer.
Perfect.
Excellent.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll have a link to it too on our page.
Yep.
So those are coming out in the beginning. You said sometime in May.
It should be the beginning of May.
And those flavors again are
watermelon mint and blackberry lavender. And those are both at 5 milligrams of THC.
What's the calorie count going to be on those?
Those are still going to be 8 calories.
Wow.
Still 2 grams of sugar.
Fantastic. I'm really looking forward to trying.
I make a really good nano emulsion, so I don't need to load it with a bunch of sweeteners to mask everything else.
I'm looking forward to seeing these out there in the market because having just tried them right now, I'm excited to tell people about them.
Yeah.
And, I know we're gearing up for our opening soon, and I'm excited to have products like these on our shelves and be able to tell
a
story.
When is your opening?
So right now we're shooting for the end of May, beginning of June. It'll depend on
perfect timing.
Just as the summer's getting underway. We're gonna be, I'm excited to have these drinks out in the summer. I got a small hammock that my kids love getting in. Because I'm from Guatemala and we have hammocks everywhere.
That's great.
And drinking these on the hammock is something I'm looking forward to this summer.
Yeah.
More importantly though, just telling people about them, and having them try, because I'm telling you, every time I introduce a seltzer to somebody who, is in that group of people who don't consume, their eyes just light up. They're like, what are you talking? A seltzer?
Mm-hmm.
A drink?
I just yell at people, hey, have you ever tried drinking your weed? And it does get attention, good or bad.
So that alone is gives me enough excitement to, want to promote products like these. Before we sign off here, is there anything else you guys want to add, actually, we've already given the good news about your new drink. So anything else you want to sign off with?
I mean, we're just really excited to be here in Massachusetts doing, what we love. Dylan and I have both been in this cannabis industry for a long time. We've met a lot of people, seen a lot of good people do good things. We're excited to see more dispensaries like yourselves opening who actually care about what they're doing. Bud tenders frequently are some of the best people that I've met in this industry. And I'm, really happy to be just continuing to participate, particularly in our home state here.
Awesome.
I just want to say thanks for your guys' support of Cantrip, as well as all the consumers and retailer partners that we have.
Fantastic.
Just got a shout out.
Great team. We love meeting you guys at Cantrip. Such energy from your booth. So it was great.
Very brightly colored is kind of our vibe.
I think I have a picture of you and Colin.
Probably.
Yeah, next to the new flavor. So
it was funny because we were standing at another booth and I saw your booth and I was like, I don't see them, I'm like, they're colors.
Yeah.
I'm still not sure if we were allowed to have a speaker, but Colin brought a really nice one anyway, so we also had kind of like the music going. So it was
a
little party right in the aisle there.
It was great.
You gotta make your own rules sometimes.
Right. Well, great team, great company. Loved having you here. We are down here at the Summit Lounge here in Worcester, where we do all of our podcasts. So if you're in the area or ever want to come down, we're usually here on a Wednesday night. And stay tuned for some more content.
Yeah, thank you very much to everyone for tuning in here. And I want to say thank you one more time to our guests here from Cantrip. And we're excited to feature them. Especially with this podcast discussed a lot of the things that got them here. But I just want to say thank you to everyone. And with that, we're going to sign off with another episode of The Discerning Eye. This is Alan Villatoro.
I'm Erin Luna.
And I'm Brianna Gardner.
All right. Thank you very much, everyone.
Have a good one.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Discerning Eye podcast with Alan Villatoro, Erin Luna, and Brianna Grignon of Discerned Cannabis Purveyors. Stay tuned for more podcasts and keep up to date with Discerned Cannabis Purveyors by visiting their website at discernedcannabis.com. That's discerndcannabis.com.